Good morning.
Good and rainy one, huh? Well, let's see what happens here. This is a practitioner's class. And it's very important that we understand, even if at first we understand intellectually, the most important points in the work. The reason is this. When the master was asked, "Art thou he that should come?" There was a question about it in John the Baptist's mind. And the master answered, "Go show John what things ye have seen. The sick are healed, the dead are raised. To the poor the gospel is preached." He didn't say, "Yes, I am the master." He did not say, "Yes, this is a correct teaching." He showed forth the proof or fruits of the healing. Now then, a great deal of the world is seeking relief from the injustices of the world, the inharmonies, the discords. The world is seeking freedom, first of all, from the sinful states of human consciousness, these states of consciousness that would prey one upon another. The states of consciousness that gave birth to empires, to dictators, to ruthless capitalism in the days when we had ruthless capitalism, and later to the days when we had ruthless unionism. And we had much ruthless unionism, even though that also is fast disappearing. But all of these states of consciousness of men have resulted in the other sins and diseases of the rest of the world, because such gross states have brought upon the rest of the world fears, lack, limitation, horrible living conditions, so forth. And so, the world seeks freedom from those conditions. The world is not yet ready to seek God. In all of this religious revival which you see around the world, don't believe for a minute that that indicates that the world is seeking God. Far from it. It means that if it's necessary, the world would tolerate God in order to get free of its troubles. But what it's really seeking is freedom from its troubles. By any means, it would reach out to a dictator if a dictator would promise it. It would reach out to any president who would promise more than people have got now. The world is not yet ready to reach out for God. They're only willing to reach out for help, like a man who came to our office one day and said the doctors had pronounced him incurable, but he was ready to try metaphysics. And, all right, where shall we begin? He said, "I have nothing to do with beginning. Just tell me how much I'm going to owe you and I'll give you a check." Well, that was his attitude. He came to be healed of disease. How it was done was none of his business. He was willing to pay for it. And the world is willing, in some measure, to pay for freedom from its troubles. course, if it could, it would just vote for somebody that would take their troubles away from and not bother them with government anymore or business or anything else. Now, we, in our work, are only a degree removed from that. You may not believe it, but most of the people who come to us for help, for healing, also are not interested in God. They are perfectly willing, if it has to come through God, well, of course, I'll try that too. Why not try God? But it isn't God that they're seeking. I don't mind telling you that I believe there are only very few people who come to us who really have any interest at all in God. I have a feeling that pretty nearly 90% are seeking healing of the body, of the purse, of alcoholism, of drugs, of unhappy desires, and so forth. Excuse me. Now, many of these people, before they come to us for help, have been told that the help is to come through God, and they seem more or less resigned to being willing to accept it. But it is that and nothing more, because the moment you start talking about God, you can see the attention drift over to, yes, but the rent is going to be due Saturday, or yes, but this lump hasn't gone down since day before yesterday, or the so forth and so on. Now, so far as we are concerned, it is not our concern in the beginning when they come to us that they come primarily for healing, because probably most of us did the same thing. Many of us did. Many of us came to whatever our spiritual teaching may be primarily because we had something wrong that the then existing methods of helping wouldn't help. And so we decided to try God, or try Christian Science, or try unity, or try right thinking. But we tried it for this particular purpose. Now then, it has proven that that was a legitimate entry for us, because through that problem, and through having to turn to God for the solution of that problem, an interest in God itself was aroused, and we got onto the spiritual path. And in some cases we have found God, or we have found a measure of God, or we're getting closer to finding our spiritual lives. So it is with those who come to us. Let us not concern ourselves too much in the beginning with the fact that they come primarily for loaves and fishes of one sort or another, because remember our own previous experience, and work slowly and patiently with them. And those that have a capacity for experiencing God will find it. And those that haven't may have their healing at that moment, go on about their business, later come back for another healing, or go to someone else. It may take 10, 20, 30, 40 healings before an individual awakens to the fact, you know, there's a God. Perhaps I should be getting more interested in God. All these things are well. Let us be grateful for everybody that is so sick that they have to turn to God, or has such a problem that they must turn to God, because in the end, every knee must bend to God. So whatever brings them, let's be grateful for it, and let us cooperate with them and help them. Now, the point that I'm coming to is this, that since the world is seeking freedom from its discords, and since those who come to us are seeking freedom through God, the only answer we can give is to heal the sick, to raise the dead, to preach this gospel of release and freedom to them. But the preaching of the gospel must be by far the least important part. Until such time as the healing of the sick and the raising of the dead has been accomplished, because otherwise our preaching is apt to be clouds without rain. It isn't a very nice thing to start preaching to people how wonderful God is and how unreal their error is while they're in the error. It's far better to give them the healing first, and then those who come back point out the how and the why, and do the preaching then. And so healing is an important part of our ministry. It is not the most important part. The most important part is awaking individuals who come to us to their Christhood, arousing that Christ in them, bringing them to their cosmic experience or experience of actual inner God contact. But remember this, that we will never get that far with them or have the opportunity to do that if we do not first bring healings to them. It isn't that we will heal everyone who comes to us. We may not. Or we may. We may be healing everyone who comes to us and not know it, because sometimes healings come much later than we anticipate. Sometimes there are conditions to be fulfilled within them before the healing is realized. Now, since healing, then, is an evidence of the truth of our entire ministry, and since you never will open the spiritual consciousness of anyone unless you are yourself a healer, it takes that quality of consciousness that heals to enlighten. It takes that quality of consciousness that is a healing consciousness to bring this light. That is one of the reasons that during those early years of Walt Whitman, after he had had his illumination, and probably didn't know what it was all about, that he spent every spare minute he could in hospitals, just sitting by the beds of soldiers, doing little things for them. He thought he was just there writing letters for them or giving his spare change to them for postage stamps or just saying a word of comfort or taking their loneliness away. But we, looking at it now, can see that he was led there with his healing consciousness to lift them up. And in the responses that he received from some of the boys in those hospitals, it's evident to see that he had a healing consciousness while, of course, at that time, the world knew nothing about individual spiritual healing. Now then, the healing consciousness is a necessary one for a teacher on the spiritual path. It is an impossibility to say, I am a teacher, but I can't heal. Because the teacher who can't heal has nothing to teach except words in a book, and you could read those words for yourself. You wouldn't need the teacher. Teaching is an impartation of spiritual truth from one soul to another. Spiritual teaching is the awakening of the sleeping Christhood by one who is already awakened. That is the nature of spiritual healing. Spiritual healing has nothing to do with reading out of books or teaching out of books. Spiritual teaching has nothing to do with telling truth to people. They can find that out all for themselves. There are enough books and magazines and papers around the world so that everybody can be self-taught without a teacher. But the teacher's function is that last mile that very few students can achieve for themselves. And that is the awakening of the soul, the awakening of that inner light, the bringing into being of an inner light. We have had teachers with a great capacity for that in modern ages. Certain ones seem to have been especially endowed for bringing to light the sleeping giant in men and women. Now, the next question comes up. How is that healing consciousness developed? There again, there are two ways. The personal contact with a teacher who has been in some measure awakened is one way of achieving it. The other way is self-instruction through an understanding of the correct letter of truth and the constant practice of it until the consciousness is developed. Now we have behind us perfect examples of today's lesson. In the early days of Christian Science, the healings were nothing less than miraculous. It is because of that that I'm going to have to ask you to give me a healing. It is because of that that the Christian Science movement spread. In the lifetime of Mrs. Eddy, and she really didn't begin until she was in the 60s, let's see, 1875 when the first edition of Science and Health was written, she was then 54 or 55 years of age. And incidentally, I was 55 when the Infinite Way was written. So we began about the same time. And yet in her one span from 55 on, she saw Christian Science develop from where one woman knew it to where there were probably 1,500 churches all over the world, and her writings had been translated into a half a dozen languages. That's a tremendous thing. The reason for that was healings. The healings that took place were just out of this world. They were in the nature of miracles. And of course, looking back now on some of the men and women who were associated with her and noting the great healing works that they did, you can see why this took place. Then, in 1892, which was 2 years before the original Mother Church was built in Boston, the Unity Movement was started. Just 1892. And within one individual's lifespan, again, a worldwide movement developed. A movement that covered the entire earth. And again, it happened through healing. There was nothing responsible for the growth of Unity but healings. And if you look at the names of the early students and teachers and practitioners in the Unity movement, you'll understand readily why it would spread around the world. They were miracle workers. Now, Christian Science has had a period of great falling off. In some places, the church attendance is very, very sad. But if you look at it, you'll find the same condition exists that must always exist. Wherever there is a very fine teacher or a very fine group of practitioners, that church is as busy and active and full as it ever was in the heyday. Wherever you find churches where, or fields, cities, towns, where there is not a good teacher, where there are not good practitioners, that is where the work is falling down. And of course, in Unity, you have the same thing. In Unity, you have very little of healing left today. And so the question must come, why has there been a falling off in Christian Science healing and in Unity healing? Why has this happened since they did have originally the principle of healing? I can only give you an answer based on my own experience. Someone else may have a different answer. So I won't try to give you an answer for Christian Science or for Unity, but I will give you the answer that I myself have experienced in watching this work for 25 years. Wherever there has been a falling off of healing work, it is because students have refused, in many cases deliberately so, have refused to understand the nature of error. All healing work is based on an understanding of the nature of error. You might think that healing work is dependent on an understanding of the nature of God. That would be true. That would be true if we could encompass the meaning of the nature of God, but we can't. In other words, anybody in the world can say, God is all, which is, of course, the nature of God. And if they could encompass that, nothing else would be necessary for healing. But it, you know, it's very possible to say God is all, and then the next minute say, well, now let's see how we're going to protect ourselves from this weather, or how we're going to protect ourselves from our neighbor's wrong thinking. Now, we've just said God is all, but no, now we turn up with weather or climate or a neighbor. And so the declaration that God is all is not sufficient. There have been lots of so-called absolute teachings come to the market, all based on something that actually is true, God's allness. But none of these teachings ever last, and none of them ever last as a healing teaching. None of them ever remain very long in the realm of recognized healing agencies. Why? Because it is an impossibility for anyone on the face of the earth to accept the teaching of God's allness in its completeness, unless they have the help of an understanding of the nature of evil. Now, in every one of the writings of the Infinite Way, you will find a chapter on the nature of evil, the nature of error. And I have had probably as many students write me, why don't I leave those out? Since God is all, what do we need to know about error? You know, someday I would be tempted to do it if one of those students ever made a demonstration of health or harmony or supply. But they're always the students who are struggling the hardest, but hating like everything to face the very thing that is the cause of their inharmony and their discord. Now, today we took up the subject of treatment from the nature of God, using God as the first word of every treatment, seeing God as allness, God as the mind of the individual, of the life, the soul, the spirit, God as the only activity, and so forth and so on, and you will find that there is nothing more effective than that form of treatment that keeps its mind stayed on God. But that treatment is based on the supposition that you already know the nature of evil. And herein comes the point now that is preventing good healing in the world. Wherever there isn't satisfactory healing, whether it's in Christian Science, Unity, or the Infinite Way, this is the reason for it. I don't mention New Thought for the simple reason that I don't believe it's ever possible for New Thought to do healing work except on a psychological basis. But there is a possibility that Christian Science and Unity and the Infinite Way can show this world a real spiritual healing principle and do great works with it. But they will all have to recognize this. Now follow me. Throughout all ages, there have been two powers. There is the power of God and the power of Satan or devil. There is the power of good or the power of evil. There is the power of immortal mind or the power of mortal mind. There is always a greater power overcoming a lesser power. And in modern days, you even have statements like, oh, the indwelling Christ will do this for you, and the indwelling Christ will do that for you, as if there were some negative power for the indwelling Christ to operate on. Now, to say that the indwelling Christ will do this or that for you is no different than saying God will do this or that for you. And the secret is that God won't do anything for you. God is not going to heal anyone's disease. God is not going to reform anyone. God is not going to supply anyone, and God isn't going to send supply to anyone. God is not going to do a thing. God already is, and God's work was done in the beginning. There's no use of going to God. The thing we've got to do is lift ourselves up into the atmosphere where God is operating. Now, I'm reminded right here of a lady who came to me in the first year of my work with a very serious disease. And we worked along for 6 or 7 weeks together, and she was making beautiful progress. But one day she said, you know, I don't think there's any use of our continuing this, because why should God heal me? I'm apt to be a sinner again when after I'm healed, and God would know that now, so why should he heal me knowing that I'm apt to go back to sin again when I'm healed? And I said, well, you put me in a very embarrassing position, because I have to tell you something that I don't like to tell young students. They may not be prepared for it, but you'll have to be in this case. I never did think God would heal you. I never expected God to heal you. I never had any hopes of it, and I haven't any now. That isn't the principle from which we work. The principle from which we work is that God is an infinite good, and you are God's offspring, and therefore you are already in his household, in his kingdom, in his perfection, and I am ignoring the appearances of your former sins and of your present diseases, and in ignoring them, I'm merely holding within myself to your true identity. And I'm not acknowledging any power in this disease to perpetuate itself or do anything to you because of God's allness. Well, that was a little too deep for her, but the point that I make now is that at no time should anyone expect God to heal disease. If God could heal disease, I'm sure God would do it long before we get around to giving a treatment in just the right manner. Our treatment is not meant to influence God. Never forget this. Your prayers must never attempt to influence God. Your prayers must never be an attempt to bring God into your experience. Your prayers must never be in any wise expecting God to do something. It is like the sunshine that may be out here. If it isn't, we'll wait for the clouds to go by. If it is, we lift up the shade, but to say to the sun, O sun, won't you come into our room? Might just as well say to God, O God, won't you come into my body? Won't you come into my finances? Won't you come into my business? God is. God is omnipresent. God is omnipotent. God is omniscient. There's no use trying to get God to do something. No use trying to influence God. Now then, if this is true, that God already is, and that God is already all that you're expecting or hoping to ask of God, what is this one remaining thing that seems to block the activity of God from your being or body or business? And I will say to you that one of the major things is that you still have two powers. You still have a power of evil, and you're expecting God to do something about it, or to it. And therein lies the error. There are not two powers. There is no such thing as immortal mind and mortal mind. There is a term mortal mind, and if you refer to Mrs. Eddy's writings, she was the one who popularized that term, you will find that she says it is a term denoting nothingness. She doesn't say it's a thing. She doesn't say it's an entity. She doesn't say it's a presence or a power. She says it's a term. Not only that it's a term, but it's a term denoting nothingness. Now, I don't have to tell you how many Christian scientists are walking around afraid of mortal mind, afraid of a term denoting nothingness. You see that? I have had the same experience in the infinite way by saying to students, remember, there are no such things as sins or diseases. These that are appearing to us as such are appearances or illusions. Then I have them call up and say, will you help me get rid of my illusion? Now, you know, to know that a thing is an illusion is the healing of it. That itself is the healing of it. To be able to see that a condition doesn't exist as an entity or an identity. It doesn't exist as something with a name or a form or an outline. I know that the appearance does. I know there is an appearance right here of a ghost. But there is no ghost there. And the moment you can say, ah, but it's an appearance, not a ghost, the healing has taken place. It is only while you say, no, it is a ghost and you must help me get rid of it, that you still need healing. But the moment you can be made to see, oh, it isn't a ghost, it's an illusion, an appearance, that is the moment in which it disappears. Now, don't translate a sin or a disease into another word or another term and still have it there as something to be removed or healed. If you're going to translate it into something that means to you nothingness, whatever that word may be. In our work, we use several words. We use the word appearance. We use the word mirage, illusion, mesmerism, hypnotism, anything. You know that a mesmerist cannot produce a thing. A mesmerist may be able to make you see a dozen snakes squirming around, but he can't even produce one snake. All he can produce is the illusion of snakes, a mental image without form, without substance. That's all a hypnotist can do. Now, The basic error of this world is hypnotism. It is our having become hypnotized with appearances. And it is like looking at the streetcar tracks come together and looking at them so long that we actually believe it and then are afraid to get on the streetcar. And so it is. We look at appearances so long or hear about them so long that we become hypnotized. And we actually believe there are streetcar tracks out there coming together like this when in our unhypnotized state we know they're this way. For 1,400, nearly 1,500 years, the people were so hypnotized by the sky and earth, water coming together, that they wouldn't venture out very far from land in a boat. They were hypnotized by that appearance. And had they just stopped to think of it, they would have known that the sky is always in the sky and the water is always in the sea, and it was safe to go out. No. They were looking at it so long that they were hypnotized. And so we may say that there is a universal hypnotism which presents to us these forms or appearances of sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. Now, the beginning of our freedom comes when we can realize God as infinite, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, God as the only law, the only power, the only substance, the only cause, and then say, ah, yes, then this appearance of sin, disease, or death cannot be a reality, cannot be an existence, cannot be something that has form or outline or presence or activity or law. Then this appearance is a nothingness, an illusion. Or if we use the word temptation, or if we use the word claim, then we can say, ah, this claim then is not a person, is not a condition, is not a thing. It is a term denoting nothingness, or it is an illusion without substance, without law, without presence, without reality. Now, through that understanding of the nature of evil as nothingness, as appearance or suggestion or claim or hypnotism, now we can ignore it and commence to abide in God's allness. Ah, while you have two powers, you cannot bring forth good healing works. You never will come to a recognition of the infinite nature of God's good power until you understand that evil, regardless of its name or nature, error, regardless of its name or nature, sin or disease, regardless of its name or nature, exists only as an appearance that has no substance, no law, and no cause. In other words, that it exists as a state of ignorance, because the truth of being is God's allness. Now, if you were to take up the subject of error, not as if it was something to be afraid of and something to be fought or something to be protected against, that will only get you into more trouble because you've built two powers for yourself. But take up the nature of error and find some way in your own language, some way that satisfies your own mind, to bring yourself to the realization that God alone is power. Now, I suppose it came to me in a strange way, maybe of help to you. If not, you'll have to find some way that does satisfy your own mind. The way it came to me was this. Inasmuch as I could only grasp the word God as invisible and infinite, as something that couldn't be seen, heard, tasted, touched, or smelled, or reasoned, or thought, that I said, well, if that's true, then all of the power in the world is invisible. So now I don't have to fear anything that's visible. Now, if I can see it, hear it, taste it, or touch it, or smell it, let it go Gallagher. I don't care anything about it. Because the power cannot be in it. I don't care if it's anything as small as an atom or as big as an atom bomb. I don't care if it's as small as a germ or as large as a bullet. If it exists in the realm of that which can be seen, heard, tasted, touched, smelled, or thought about, it isn't power. All power is in the invisible. And so very quickly, when these claims were presented to me, I would say, oh, well, if you can see it or hear it, don't worry about it. And gradually, I built up within myself this realization that all power is in the invisible. Now, of course, there have been people who asked for an explanation of that, and I can't give it, because to me, there is no other explanation than that. I never saw the invisible with my eyes. I can't explain it. It is a withinness. It is something beyond description. But that is where all power lies. All power lies in that which you cannot see, hear, taste, touch, or smell. All power lies in that which you can't even think about. That's why after a while, it's so foolish to think about God. Because that God you're thinking about isn't God at all, it's your concept of God, and it has no power either. And so you even let the word God alone and say, well, God is invisible too. We'll just let God act. And then we'll be aware of God by the effect. We know God by the effect. We can see healings, we can hear them, taste them, touch them, smell them, and behold them, and think them. But the healings are only a result of an invisible action. And it's an invisible action that has nothing to do with your right thinking or wrong thinking. It's an invisible action that lies beyond the realm of thought. Our thinking, as we're doing here this morning, which is really a reasoning process or treatment process, this is to lead us back to the actual consciousness of the statements that I'm making. The statements that I'm making are not power. If these statements were power, we'd have the whole world healed this morning. But it is the consciousness behind these statements that brings out the power, and it is the individual's response to that consciousness that helps the individual who comes. That is why we cannot walk up and down the street healing everybody we see. They are not receptive to this state of consciousness. They would be receptive to a pill. For instance, when I was a kid, I had what they called St. Vitus dance. And none of the doctors could do anything about it. None of them could heal it. And I guess pretty serious things were predicted. But my mother found a doctor who was, what do they call him? Homeopathy. And this man cured me in 3 weeks. He gave my mother a little bottle of medicine. And he says, I must warn you, you will have to follow instructions very carefully. We don't want to hurt this child. You'd only have one drop of this in a full water glass of water. And only twice a day. Be careful that you don't get two drops through. It must be one. If you get two drops through, throw it away. Start over again. There must not be more than one. But the second day, he will be ready for two drops of it in a glass of water. And the third day, three. But remember, the next day must go back to one again, and then two, and then three, and please watch what, so forth and so on. And in 3 weeks, I was so fascinated watching these one drops that I was completely healed and had no more St. Vitus dance. Now, I'll bet right now that the medicine was a glass of water. Now, you know, there isn't such a powerful medicine ever invented that could be given to a child to have such violent effects. In fact, they didn't have any violent effects. It just made me interested to watch twice a day what was going to happen. If we can be made to give power in a drop of water, we can be healed with it. If we can be made to give power to bones buried in a grave, it certainly can heal us. If we can be made to have faith in a crucifix or a star or some other symbol of good, it will operate. But if we can be made to give power to error, we can also suffer from it. If we can be made to give power to somebody's wrong thinking, we can be made to suffer from it. Because it's a matter of as ye believe in your conviction that it is so unto you, in accordance with your faith, be it unto you. But now here is where we are rising above belief and above faith. We cannot now have faith in God. You see why? Because having faith in God gives us also a faith in something else that God is going to do something to. And so we have to lose our faith in God and understand that God doesn't require any faith. The faith is really the understanding of God's oneness, God's allness. Let me see if we can operate this way. Let us take the word law. God is law. Now, you've read that in Scripture, and I know you've heard it ever since you first came into any metaphysical teaching. God is law. Why has anything ever been necessary since then? Why didn't we put down all our books and say, I don't need any books now, and I don't need any teachers now, since this is the whole truth? What? Yeah. That's the whole truth. You never need anything but that one statement. Why? Well, if God is law and God is infinite, law must be infinite. But God, it's God's law that's infinite. Well, then is there a law of sin? Is there a law of disease? Is there a law of limitation? Is there a law of climate? Is there a law of weather? Is there a law of foods? Is there a law of medicines? Why, no. Have we just said that God is law? That leaves only one law in this world, and that law must be God's law, and that law must be good law. Now, tell me, what are we doing sitting around studying? There's no other truth than that. There are no other laws, no laws of heredity. There are no other laws but the law of God. Ah, I'll tell you the answer. There isn't one of us here that believes it. There isn't one of us here can accept it. It's too deep. It's too far. The mind won't grasp it. And only as you come into spiritual consciousness can you grasp, and then only for a minute or two at a time, usually after a very good treatment or when you're high in consciousness, you can for a second grasp that tremendous fact that God's law is the only law. And then in that instant, you can really raise the dead. But it's only 5 minutes later that you're believing in a law of climate or a law of heredity or a law of vitamins or a law of foods or a law of something else. It isn't your fault. This isn't criticism or condemnation, and certainly it isn't judgment, because I'm right in the same seat with you on that. That I have wonderful moments when God's law is the only law and I see beautiful things from it, and then some other law comes to plague me 15 minutes later, either in my own experience or a patient or a student. Now then, the secret is that God is law, but that God is the only law because God is infinite. And since God is also good, self-created, self-maintained, self-sustained. This law of God is self-maintained and self-sustained and is eternal and infinite and omnipresent. And so, any other law, law of heredity, law of limitation, law of disease, infection, contagion, these are not laws but illusions. Ah, then, when you grasp that, you have done your healing work, and you will have very good result in your healing work. As long as you are sure that you are not trying to use God over error, as long as you're sure that you're not trying to use God's law to nullify another law, as long as you're sure that you're not trying to get God's presence to do away with another presence. So you see the important place that the nature of error has in our work. Always it must be kept clear within us that we are not thinking of God as a great power. We are not thinking of God as overcoming something or doing something to something or somebody. We are not thinking that in any way, shape, manner, or form that there is anything to have anything done to. And so it is that in one way or another, we have to come to a place of satisfaction within our minds that whatever the nature of the error is, it cannot exist as presence or power. We had an experience of this kind, I guess a year and a half ago, in the islands. With a doctor. Three doctors were given up to die because of an infection they had gotten in some experiments. And two of them died. They would have died within a year. Two of them died in 8 months. And the other one went to bed to die in the 9th month. And he finally was at a place where it was just a few days before he was to go. And one of our students visited him, told him it wasn't necessary for him to die, and explained to him that through prayer, through this understanding that he could be healed, and she wasn't quite confident enough of her ability to bring out the complete healing, although she really did. But she said she would give him enough help so that he could reach Honolulu and find Mr. Goldsmith and get his help. Well, that man was out of bed the next day, and I'm convinced that he really had a fine healing. And he came over to Honolulu, called me, and I couldn't see him. I was busy. But I asked him what his trouble was, and he told me he was a doctor, told me the nature of this trouble, and that he got it through this research work. And I said, well, how are you coming on with your research work? And he said, not well, not well. Now, I didn't plan it this way. This just, God put this through my lips. I said, well, I guess that's natural, isn't it? He said, no, not with all the hard work we're doing. It isn't natural to fail. Well, I wasn't thinking of that, but I was thinking of the fact that you were looking for law of disease, weren't you? He said, well, yes, certainly. If we find the law of this disease, we'll be able to find a remedy for it. No, if you find a law of disease, you'll perpetuate it, because anything that has a law is going to be perpetuated by its law. So if disease has a law, brother, you're going to have it forever and forever and forever. Oh, he said, say that again. I never heard anything like that. I repeated it. I hadn't heard of it before that either. But it was true, because he was in both of our classes, wasn't he, in Honolulu this trip? Oh, yes. And he's back at his research work and so forth, healing work. But he's doing more healings from knowing that there's no law of disease. And he says every time that I see him, he says, you know, when someone comes in the office, the only thing I can remember is, gosh, if there were a law of this disease, it would last forever. Well, now, do you see what I mean by the nature of error? You could do all the knowing of God's allness you want, but it won't bring you to the fact that there's no law of disease. It's only when you come back, get down to the fact of what is the nature of error, that you begin to probe around and find out that error says that there are laws of disease. Ah, now we've come up against the fact, though, that God is law. Oh, well, now we don't need God to get rid of disease. Now we know that since God is the only law, disease has no law, so we don't need a God now. We're just like those fellows out in the boat that were shipwrecked. They'd been there a long, long time, couldn't find land. Finally, one of them says, any of you fellows know how to pray? And the father says, well, yes, I used to pray when I was a child. Well, get busy, we need it now. Oh, wait a minute, no, 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 you don't have to pray, there's land over there. Now, we're in the same boat. We really don't have to pray. We really don't need God. We really don't. Because God being the only power and the only presence, we just don't need God for anything. God has only one function in our life, and that is that we live with God, that we abide in this spiritual knowing, in this spiritual awareness, in this spiritual consciousness. We don't really need God for to bring us supply, because God is the only supply there is. God can't bring us supply, because that would mean there is a God and supply. And there is no God and supply. There is only God. God itself is the supply. Many people think that they need God for protection. But Scripture says no. God is the high tower. God is the fortress. God is the abiding place. God is the hiding place. You see, you don't need God and. God really is. So we don't need God for any purpose. We only need God for God. Now, when we have this conscious realization of God, we have the abiding place and the hiding place and the fortress and the high tower. When we have God, we have the law of God, and we have no other law. When we have God, we have the life of God, and we don't have to say any prayers to prolong anybody's life. Because God itself is individual life. And so you see that we, by a roundabout way, come right up to the absolute and say, God is. That's enough. But we have done it first by taking care of these appearances, not ignoring them, not running away from them and hiding our head in the ground and saying, oh, God is love, God is all. Those things will not do it for us. If they would do it for us, then these healings would be going on all over the world just by saying, oh, God in you will do this, or the indwelling Christ will do that. No, no, no. Please believe me, there is one thing that will do all things for everybody, and that is the knowledge of God's allness, the actual realization of God's allness. And that realization of God's allness comes about when you are willing to take steps like we just took with the law of disease and come to that place of recognition where there cannot be a law of disease. A law would perpetuate the disease. Now, you say, was that a spiritual healing? Yes, that was a spiritual healing, because the realization that there is no law of disease led to the realization of God's allness, and it was God's allness that did the work. The very moment, mark this, the very moment you have God as the only presence and power, and can do that same thing to substance as we just did to law, or the same thing to anything else, let's take substance. There is a claim of physical substance, the substance of this body. And because it is physical substance, it is always changing, aging, weakening. But the truth is God's allness, and God is spirit. Then the only substance must be spiritual substance. Now, if spiritual substance is the infinity of being, is there a physical substance? And the answer is no. Now, do we need a God to change physical substance? Do we need a God to change bad substance into good substance? Do we need God to change materials? No, we don't need God at all. The only God we need is the realization of God's allness as spiritual substance. That's all. That is the power, but it isn't a power over material substance, because we've learned that in the infinity of spiritual substance, there is no physical substance. Ah, but the doctors will say, but look at the appearances and let me show you this under a glass. Very much like the smart Alex some years ago who, when I said there is no death, said, no, let me walk you down the street and show you a cemetery. That may be good proof for you, but not for me, because I see life from the other side where all these people are still living. Now, please read every one of the chapters on the nature of error. And don't hesitate to go over them frequently, so as to keep yourself in line with the realization that in the infinite way, we're not really seeking God or reaching out for God to do anything or be anything for us. Our God is an omnipresent God of love that's always functioning without any help from us and without any influencing on our part. And our God is so infinite that we haven't got any troubles to bring to God. Ours is a realization of the great truth that whatever the nature of the trouble may be, it isn't actually an entity or an identity, a substance, a law, or a cause. It is somewhere out there in the realm of mirage or illusion. This also helps. There is no such thing as an externalized illusion. You may believe that you can actually see a discord out here, like water on the desert, but you can't. That water on the desert isn't out there on the road. It's inside your own false seeing. You may really believe that car tracks come together outside of you somewhere. They don't. Outside of you, they're this way. It's up here in your false seeing that car tracks come together. There's no such thing as an externalized sin that has to be healed. There is no such thing as an externalized disease that has to be met. There are no externalized lumps and no externalized fevers. There is no externalized paralysis. These are all illusory states of thought, not merely of your thought. They're more or less universal thought. You're merely seeing them through that degree of mortal thought that's left in you. That is why also in our work, we never, never under any condition blame the patient for their erroneous states of thought. We hold them in no condemnation because it isn't their fault. They are accepting a universal belief. The same as we are, when we have any form of discord, it's not your wrong thinking or mine. It's a universal belief which we at the moment are accepting because we are not yet healed of all mortal sense. The Master says, touch me not, for I have not yet ascended. In other words, he has not yet risen above, completely above, mortal sense. Now, whatever degree, and that's why this is something you all should know, the question is asked all of the time, Why is it that our practitioners still have discords and our teachers have discord? And even our very best practitioners and teachers either wear eyeglasses or arch supports or this or that. And my answer is this. In the degree that we still have some phase of mortal consciousness that we have not risen above, in that degree must our errors be externalized. And so it is that